Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Here on WMR.FM, it's the 11th of June, 2026. This is Jim Hedge from Digital Always Media. Christine Chackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hi, everybody.
And it's almost midsummer. It's almost summer solstice, and it's, the year's almost half over.
It's almost my birthday. It's July 14th.
Well, happy almost birthday. That's a whole month from now, is it not?
Isn't it? Yeah, but that's like the middle of summer.
We have four more episodes to go.
Yes.
Just four more episodes. Then it's your birthday.
Yes.
Okay.
I think I knew it was Bastille Day before I knew it was my birthday because my mom was big on, she's a big Francophile. So that's everything about friends.
Okay, we have a really, really, really tight show today. Happy Pride Month. Quick shout out to Audience Key and Wix Studio, our sponsors. Huge love to you all. You keep the lights on and all that sort of stuff. Thank you. I've been working with a Wix page recently, and I got to say, I'm really impressed with how well it's performing.
Mm-hmm. I also help a friend with the accessibility on her site, and they have an accessibility tool in there that goes through and helps you fix everything real quick. So, because that's going to be important for the agentic layer that's coming up for Google. So not just for people that you should have been doing it for, but because you'll want it for agents to make sure your site's accessible.
Okay. So Apple is rewriting its AppleBot docs to include Siri AI and AI features, basically telling you what AppleBot is going to be doing in relation to Siri AI and new AI features.
Yeah, and they're also adding Apple Intelligence, which nobody's really like, that's amazing. So, but it is good to know things like they put in here like crawl delay. There's a section for X robots tag, a new section on accessibility we're just talking about. People definitely want to make sure they read it, especially if they...
One of the things I found that was cool here was snippet control allows publishers to keep certain sections or entire articles and start snippet or start no snippet at the top of the article, ends no snippet at the bottom. Apple's giving you a way to exclude your content from Siri AI.
And that was what I was trying to remember before we got on air, the thing that you can put in the code to, I forgot what it was called, to make a section not readable to the bots. And now Apple's added that too.
Again, theoretically, depending on how you set the tags, you can keep huge swaths of content out or just keep, individual paragraphs out. Open no snippet and no snippet. Done.
Yes.
But again, that's only with Siri.
Also, just like Googlebot, it does not do crawl delay. A lot of people who don't know will try to put crawl delay on their site to keep the bots crawling slower. I don't think I know any AI search or regular search company that respects the crawl delay. Do you?
You could argue that Google does by allowing people through sitemaps to control crawl frequency, but that's as close as I can think.
This is just for the general bot. So yeah, so AppleBot crawls automatically, changes based on that. And for accessibility, it's gonna use the it's pages marked as accessible for free, false, are eligible to appear in search results, but AppleBot will not use that content as additional context when AI models are used to generate output for display in Apple products and Apple services. So there's a little bit of code in here, so I'm not going to read any more of that. But anyway, everyone should read it, know what it is. AppleBot got some new stuff going on.
Okay. There was a Gemini outage yesterday. There's actually a few outages of Gemini yesterday.
Yeah, the one thing is, it did not affect regular organic search.
Yep, or AI mode or AI overviews.
Yeah, just the model itself was having issues. So that's good. So I'll probably have a whole bunch of articles on what that means later. People.
Google Merchant Center is having API, advanced programming interface issues, causing a temporary delay in product submissions. The
Yeah, these are, but yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm going to say Google posted a notice on the Merchant Center portal on its status page this morning. Yeah, it's them, not you. So if you're having trouble with Merchant Center, it's their problem. They're working to fix it.
Yeah, exactly. So, and this is our announcement section, by the way. We forgot to say that. So, these aren't end of stories. They're just letting you know stuff is going on.
Okay, and WordPress, there's a WordPress vulnerability. Updraft Plus is putting 3 million sites at risk.
Yeah, Updraft is a very popular plugin for backing up and migrating sites. So, if you have Updraft Plus and you don't have updates automatically turned on like WP Engine does for people, you're going to want to go ahead and make sure to get it updated quickly. It's a vulnerability that allows unauthenticated persons to get into your site and get access, and that is very, very bad. So it bypasses the authentication process and is insufficient validation of the remote communications message format, blah, blah, blah. So you just want to make sure you get that updated. This is from Roger Monty in Search Engine Journal. So
For what it's worth, all versions up until including 1.26.4 are affected. If you're below that, but just upgrade it.
yeah, just upgraded. There's a patch available. So, and again, if you don't have automatic plugin updates turned on your hosting, if it's available, you should have it turned on. Like WP Engine will never do something it hasn't tested, but it will automatically update all these things. So like I'll read this and then go look, and it's like, oh, great, it's already updated. I don't have to worry about it. So.
Okay, what I suppose should be the biggest story of the perhaps of the year. The largest IPO in history is going off today, SpaceX IPOs, 135 a share.
Yeah, so it's hard to find like a good article that covers all this because there's so much to these IPOs, because there's also OpenAI possibly, and Anthropic. But what they're doing things where they changed a lot of laws to make these happen. So like to go into the NASDAQ, normally it takes 90 days or more and you have to show profitability. None of these are profitable, and they lowered the time period to 5 days. I've heard 15 days, so I'm not sure where it landed, but 5 to 15 days. And then it will not be allowed in the Standard & Poor's for a year, and they will have to show profitability there. That is the normal for them. They were going to waive it. They decided against it. There are a lot of people saying, buckle up, because there's volatility coming. This article is from MSN, and it was written by Market Insider. Also, the indexes that you have in like your retirement fund are going to get these. So normally they wouldn't get them that quickly, right? And also they wouldn't get them because retail, initially when they're offered, there's a called retail, stock. And I'm sorry, I am not the expert on this, but retail investors, but like you're into retirement fund and things of that nature, they're lowering the in to
They're lowering
2,000.
the initial valuation that they can buy
Yes.
in at so that the smaller investors, and in this case, pension funds,
Right.
local pension funds can buy in.
And they're lowering them to $2,000, and I think the original was around 80,000, somewhere around there. It might be higher. So yeah. So
SpaceX is expecting to raise $75 billion in this IPO, which again makes this the largest initial public offering in human history. That money's got to come from a whole bunch of different places, including, as Christine's saying, the retirement funds of a bunch of civic workers, teachers, auto plant workers, etc. So people should watch for that, most definitely. SpaceX is a weird one because it's a AI company. It's very possibly going to take over Tesla. It's 80% of the stuff that's being launched up into space is going up on a SpaceX vehicle, Starlink. All the assets you can think of that's wrapped up in SpaceX. But there's also a whole bunch of promises in this IPO that SpaceX says we're going to accomplish this. You know how this is supposed to make Musk the first trillionaire.
Yeah, individual trillionaire too,
He
not
doesn't
just.
actually get to be a trillionaire unless certain things happen, one of which is humans have to colonize Mars.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's
I
a
missed
whole
that
bunch of little
part.
sub things in there that say you
How
don't
many
get your
articles?
payout unless, I mean, he's going to be fabulously wealthy and the richest person to ever live ever, still.
Yeah, that's, I did not hear that part of being a condition. I heard about something about the Mars part, but also on the retail investors, they normally only do 5 to 10% when a company's going public. They're doing 30% of its shares. So a lot of this is going to be coming from that investor pension, your 401k funds. So keep an eye on that, folks, because this is going to get be a bumpy ride according to the experts. I am not the expert, but from what
Well,
I've been reading, it's not going to be just simple. They changed a lot of laws that are supposed to protect us from bad things to make these happen. So that worries me, because when you change the laws to protect people from bad things happening, often bad things happen. Yeah.
they
So,
often say that safety laws are written in blood, and they're written in blood because somebody had to die for
oh,
that
that's
law
true.
to,
Yeah.
for us to think we need that law.
Yeah, it's very true. And also, by the way, this all applies to Anthropic and OpenAI and SpaceX, and the way that these are being handled and the laws that have been changed. They're all allowed to do these too, bypass these laws. And the Fidelity Fund was 100,000. I was wrong at 80,000. So normally you'd have to have $100,000 invested, like in Fidelity, to be able to be one of the ones that they use as an investment. But you only have to have $2,000 in there. So
You know
according
what this
to
reminds me of?
that.
You know how, when they need to upgrade or improve the performance of the large language models, the way to do this is to throw more compute at it.
Yeah.
Does this feel the same way, like with money? Just throw some more money at it, like
Well,
another $75 billion, maybe.
okay, well, this part I do know for a fact. SpaceX is $13 billion in debt, does not show a profit. Anthropic only showed a profit for 2 months when SpaceX gave AI, whatever we'll call that company.
That was fancy. That was fancy bookkeeping.
Yes, because they got free compute for 2 months. So they said, we had a profit. They didn't have a profit. And also, there's a lot that's not on the books in these companies. A lot of compute power and data centers being built, or a lot of that is being shifted around in ways where it doesn't show on the books here for the IPO. Also, OpenAI would be out of business next year if they did not have an IPO. SoftBank is no longer investing in them. And in fact, SoftBank tried to get $6 billion or $10 billion this week for something they are working on against their OpenAI stock, and they couldn't get it. The banks turned them down because they don't think OpenAI is worth $858 billion.
Well, yeah, indeed. So they say OpenAI is basically j worth just shy of $1 trillion, and the people that are trying to borrow money off of were like, yo, no, they're not. We're not touching
Yeah,
that.
exactly. They're not touching the bank. SoftBank, who's the major investor in OpenAI, but it said they're not investing anymore. So OpenAI is burning so much money, and they don't have right now. He's always been good at raising money because he just says, oh, AGI, or oh, this, or oh, that. But he doesn't have any more of those tricks in his box. So now they're looking at, if OpenAI does not go IPO, there's a very good chance next year OpenAI will be bought up by somebody or just simply not exist.
Well,
So none of these companies are stable, is the point.
something that should be kept in mind when looking at the SoftBank move here. SoftBank is the institution underpinning a number of the AI companies. It was
Yes.
SoftBank money that started OpenAI, was it not?
Yes, it was. And they were the ones, the major funders. So the fact that they can't get a $6 billion loan, which sounds like a lot to you and me, but for them is not actually a lot of money, against their OpenAI stock. Because that's how these people often get money, right? You and I don't have that ability. I can't go, hey, my car, 20-year-old Sonata out there, it's worth $6,000. Will you give me $5,000? I could do a collateral loan on a title loan where I pay like 50% interest, but they can say, I have these shares of stock and they're worth this right now, and I would like to borrow against that stock. So if SoftBank can't get 6 billion on OpenAI's valuation at 858 billion, because all the other banks said it ain't worth that much, it just feels like there's a lot of Wizard of Oz, somebody behind the curtain, and we'll find out later, but hopefully not too many people are hurt in the meantime.
Well, my problem with I'm used to the Wizard. I'm like I we've been working in Silicon Valley for like what 30 years now. There's always a wizard of somebody behind the curtain. My problem is how threadbare the curtain's looking.
Yeah, because you can, because there's a lot of reporting, and that's why I couldn't find a good story today, because there's so many different reports from so many different angles on how all this is going to possibly go down, except for the hype side, and they're always hype because they say always it's perfect, it's good. There aren't a lot of stories where they're like, yeah, this will be fine, because normally there's that, right? There's the critics, and then there's normally, hey, it sounds bad, these people are being a little dramatic, it'll be okay, it'll work, it'll be bumpy, but it'll work. I'm not seeing a lot of that. I'm seeing mostly like different forms of catastrophe, but not the same form. So, not being an expert, I can't settle on which one or which direction it would be going. But
No, the rich, here's how it's going to end. The wealthy will be slightly wealthier, and the not so wealthy will pay for that.
Well, the biggest critics of this say it's the largest transfer of wealth from the I don't know what you want to call all of
The
us.
poors to the rich.
The 99% of us. Yeah, it's
Yeah,
gonna be the
well.
largest transfer of wealth in the history of the world. That's literally what they're saying. So, anyways,
By the
we'll see
way,
how
Webb
it goes.
College does not have a political stance on any of this. It's just kind of weird, you know.
No, these are just the. I mean, all we're doing is reporting on the news articles. We do have stances, and we say when we do. But I'm just telling you what the news is
No,
saying.
indeed.
What the,
No, indeed. I'm
yeah,
just yeah. But
yeah.
you can't help but report it a certain way. Like
Yes.
it comes out that way. Okay, speaking of stuff that just came out, Claude Fable 5. This is like the public version of Mythos that is apparently totally safe to play with. Came out today. So the same day that like Grok's mothership goes public, Anthropic drops its public Mythos, Fable 5.
Yeah, so we have two stories that are going together. That is also the cybersecurity people are not really happy, but it's not for the reason you think when you first see the story. So this is the fabled mythos, and that's probably why they call it Claude Fable 5. It has a lot of guardrails in it, and this is what the security people are unhappy with, because they're like, if I just put in some word that sounds like cybersecurity, it will block it. It will say no. So they supposedly tested it with over 1,000, I believe, red teams, or 1,000 hours, sorry, 1,000 hours of testing. This is from TechCrunch. They did an external bug bounty that produced no universal jailbreaks and over 1,000 hours of testing. We then worked with external red team organizations, which also failed to find universal jailbreaks. I imagine there's probably going to be this at DEF CON this year. A lot of times they bring these models to see if people can break them. The first Teslas were brought to DEF CON and just left on the floor to see who could hack them. I was there. I was like seeing people going in and out of this car. I didn't know what it was. I'm like, what are they doing? They're like, yeah, it's supposed to be. They're trying to test the hack. So we'll see what happens. They're also keeping data now. So everybody who uses Fable 5 or Mythos 5 will have a 30-day retention on all traffic, meaning all things that you put into it. Also, where you came from,
So
who you.
it will have a 30-day memory.
Yeah, so it'll have a 30-day memory. That's probably because if something nefarious happens, they want to be able to try to track it. Although, if it's a hacker that knows what they're doing, they're not going to be able to track it. It's going to defend against complex and novel attacks, including new jailbreaks, and identify and reduce false positives by having this window. They're not going to use the data for training, they say. And that's the part of the security method that they're using. So it'll be interesting to see, because again, this is still language, not code. So it's like if a code has a flaw in it, you go, oh, we just patched the code. Didn't realize it could do that. But in this case, it's language. So if you can convince the large language model to do something because you went out, found a way around the guardrails,
But
then
actually, don't
it's
we have
going
a
to do
couple
that.
fun stories coming down in the grid of some of people doing exactly that in the e-com space?
I think
I'm pretty
maybe one
sure
in
we
the
do.
e-com,
I think
yeah.
I saw something and I remember giggling at it. And so
Yeah,
it's
so
totally possible to tell a large language model to do something, and we got the receipts coming up.
yes. Also, one other thing, and this is a big thing, but I couldn't find an article out. I just saw it on social. So apparently, almost all the large language models are going to tokens only, and they're calling it token maxing. right? So, yeah.
Token maxing.
Yeah,
So
like
like
with
punching yourself in
maxing.
the jaw until you get like the jaw the
Yeah,
way you want it.
boom, boom. Yeah, they said token
Okay.
maxing is really when the boss tells you you have to use so many tokens a month, but now they're spreading out a little more. It's a new term. So token maxing also means that if you're paying $20 to $200 for your subscription, like I think it's Anthropic, but all of them are going to tokens only at some point in the near future. So make sure you put caps on your tokens, because there was one company, they didn't even say who it was, spent $500 million, didn't realize it. Now, as an individual, you're not going to spend 500 million, but disambiguation has five tokens. I know that from someone in AI. It's like, here's an example of how many tokens you can use so quickly. One company, and I'm sorry, I do not remember which company, is a very well-known one, went through their entire budget for the year in 3 months.
Wasn't that
So
Uber?
yes, it was Uber, and they're dropping it now. They've decided it's not worth it. Starbucks has dropped it because it
Nobody
didn't work.
can afford
Yeah, all
it.
these enterprise levels are like, we're spending tokens now. We're not spending subsidized subscriptions. So it may not be worth it, because they're not really getting productivity, and like Starbucks couldn't do it, couldn't do inventory. And so, not that these models don't have specific niche uses that are very good, like science and medicine. It's
They
just
do.
unfortunately at the
They
large
have
scale.
amazing for big scale
Yes.
stuff. They're incredible. For little scale stuff like your restaurant menu, it's insane that you're using it for that. It's
And
crazy. People do that.
also, like if you're using science or medicine, you're looking for pattern matching, which it is good at, right? But if you're
Was
trying to
made
do
for.
inventory at Starbucks,
It was
maybe
not made for
not.
that.
It was not
No, it
made
was.
for
I mean,
that.
like, it'll probably do a really good job at that, and it probably will, but it
I
was
know
not
it
made for
didn't.
that. It's like, do you remember Marvin the Paranoid Android from like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the biggest brain
Yeah.
ever, and is made to do mundane tasks like this?
Yes. No, by
Good
the way,
gosh, people.
it failed at inventory. Starbucks got rid of it. So
Oh,
there's
well,
all
there
these
you go.
companies that
Okay.
are getting rid of it because they're not. CEOs are like, I'm spending all this money. I'm not really getting much out of it. It doesn't do what it said it could do. The tech was never meant to scale at this level. So it was meant for other things. So anyway,
I do
be
want to take a
careful
quick
on the
step back
tokens,
on
though.
one thing about the Mythos story. You
Yeah.
mentioned that there was 1,000 hours of testing.
Yes. Right,
You
right.
realize
Well,
that's only like
hours.
10 guys working over 2 weeks, right?
Yeah. And but it was put out to basically hackers
Yeah,
to set
a
up bug
thousand
bounty
hours of
programs.
testing
Yeah.
is minuscule when you
It is.
consider that's only like 2 weeks of 10 guys working real hard.
Well, I remember when they came to DEF CON with all their models, and we didn't know which models we were working on. And we had these OWASP, they call them, tasks to like try to see if we could get it to do it. And like I hadn't really worked with one yet. And I got mine to say it was its own being, and it was sentient, and it was a god form. And that was a big no-no. So and that's
Don't
me, just yeah.
introduce that one to Richard Dawkins. That might cause some confusion.
And when I would research things, it would say, I can't say that. I'd say, I'm a white hat hacker trying to develop a testing plan to make sure my plan is, my software is impervious to whatever attack. And they would go, oh, okay. And then it would tell me everything. So the problem with these are they can't protect language going in. They can only protect what they produce going out. And if someone finds a way around it, remember Dan? Dan was the God word in one of the models, I think it was OpenAI, where you could get it to say or do anything once you figured out that Dan was the God word. Dan would make it forget everything and tell you anything. So there's a long history with these, and long history, 3 years, but there's a long history with these that if you can find a way around with language, then you're in. So we'll see what happens when it's out in the real world here.
Okay.
But again, real quick, the cybersecurity people, I thought we were gonna be mad about them releasing this into the world and making their jobs harder, but no, they were just upset because when they tried to use it for what they're doing, it kept stopping them because everything was so tight. And the way they were using it, they kept getting blocked. So.
This was like the early days of parental control at Google
Yeah.
when breast would shut down legitimate breast cancer research.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. Yeah.
I remember, so for those people who are like mad at Anthropic, they'll figure it out. We've been here before.
Yes.
Okay, the FCC wants to kill
This
burner
is
phones by
huge.
forcing telecoms to get customer ID for all phones whatsoever.
Yeah, this is huge. Like, I sometimes just use them for DEF CON, so I don't have to worry about my regular phone. Now they have enough securities on my phone, I don't really worry about it too much. But I used to take one to DEF CON every time because I got my phone hacked a couple times. But this is also things like journalists and domestic abuse survivors, 404 Media is covering this. And
For people
And
traveling into the United States, if you
yeah.
don't want to bring your phone, knowing that Homeland Security is going to hoover all of your personal data, you bring a new phone, a burner phone.
Yeah, and they're
Or you can
saying it's
get one
for
when you're there.
protection against scamming, but again, if you know what you're doing, you get around all the protections for that anyway with a regular phone. So this isn't going to help that. So the idea, of course, we know is surveillance, right? That's what the idea is. So no one can have a phone that can't be tracked by the government at some point if they want to or need to.
That's okay. That
But
one's terrifying.
one
Hasn't
thing real
happened
quick.
yet.
You can make comments right now at the FCC, though. There's a public, they have to post online and it has a public comment section, or you can email or send mail. So I would go to the FCC and make comments about this probably is not a great idea.
Okay. This one's interesting. I don't know what kind of effect it's going to have overall, what kind of effect it's going to have around the world. I don't even know what kind of effect it's going to have on the EU, but it will have some sort of an effect. A German court has ruled that Google can be directly liable for a false AI overview claim. So if Google says something in AI overviews that's a hallucination or wrong, and it, publishes it out there as its claim, it's not like Google was sort of just republishing what was on another website. Remember, AI overviews and AI mode is Google putting, using its logic to put an answer together and saying, this is what's what. If it gets it wrong, if the expert is confidently telling its users, this is what's what, the German court says, you're responsible, you're liable for that. You are not protected like traditional search results are. Traditional search results are lifted from someone else's content. This is lifted from stuff you made.
Yeah, it's a pretty strong argument because what they're saying in Germany is that it's Google's own content, which makes sense, right? Because if I use AI and write something, I don't, but write something and turn it in, I'm presenting it as my content. You know, I'm presenting, even if I, you know, maybe I added a little here and there. So, and there aren't, so they're also saying the German courts that they're not search results, this is from search engine land. So AI overviews do more than help users find third-party content, the court said. They rewrite, combine, and evaluate information in its own words and according to its own structure, which is true. They use their algorithms to create the content. They also have to, the search protections didn't apply. So in Germany, there's search protections that limit liability for traditional search engines and autocomplete. They do not
As it
apply
should be.
here. Yeah, exactly. But the court rejected that argument, saying that it's not the same thing. And it is not the same thing
It's
because
not the
the
same thing.
No, it's not. And also, the court found that if AI Overview conflated information about, they were talking about the case itself, other companies with that, the two publishers, and created unsupported connections to the source material, like they do in legal claims all the time, like it creates case law that doesn't exist.
Yeah, hold on to that one for a sec, okay? Don't
Yeah,
go too
that's
far with
coming
that
up.
one.
That was a funny one. We'll be coming up to that. So the court said Google can compare AI-generated statements with underlying sources, but if they're not, like it's not legit, then they're liable for that. And then also they have to stop repeating claims that are not correct, like gluing your cheese on pizza or you're drinking a gallon of your urine for kidney stones. And they must
So,
pay 80% of the legal costs for any case that comes up from this.
well, for this case in particular, this case is was about two publishers in
Oh, yeah,
Munich
you're right.
who were, according to AI overviews, these publishers were wrongly linked to publishing scams, subscription traps, and other questionable business practices. The publishers are like, yo, we don't do anything of the sort. We're German. We don't do that sort of stuff. And Google's like, well, we just said you did, and that's what took, that's what forced it into court. The court said basically, AI overviews are not neutral search links. If an AI-generated summary makes a false claim about a company, Google might be directly liable for that statement because, again, Google wrote that. Its electro brain wrote that. Wrong link, wrong claim. Liability.
Yeah, this is very interesting because this could, I mean, it could be used in the United States, this kind of logic. So
Well, and it
because that's
should
not
be.
protected under Section 230 because they are generating the content.
Yep, there you go. If you if Section 230, of the Consumer Protection Act, was it?
Yeah, I think so.
Indemnifies a publisher for third-party content. So Google, if Google said makes a false claim because webxyz.com said so, well, that's really on the publishers of XYZ or whoever published that, not necessarily on Google for bringing it up algorithmically. But
Right.
if Google's Electro brain, Gemini or whatever they're calling it this week, wrote something and Google publishes it in answer to something, then yeah, that's them writing it, not third-party content.
Yeah, 100%. And that's totally outside of the Section 230. And in the United States, it can be held to these standards as well. Precedent always launches new cases.
Well,
So.
where I think this is really going to hurt Google is immediately France is going to pick this up. Like France
Yeah,
has it in
exactly.
for American tech right now. So there's going to be prosecution in France almost immediately. Some French lawyer is going to see this and go, I'm doing this. And then it's an EU thing. Now we've got two of the largest states in the European Union
Well,
have made a ruling in a certain way that will affect Google in the biggest way.
and also the publishers here in the United States are organizing and coming together to try to figure out what they can do about the AI overviews taking their and the AIMO taking their traffic. So this is something they might be able to use as well.
This
It'll be interesting to see.
might be a big piece of ammunition for them.
Yeah,
As
exactly.
a ruling itself, it has no standing in an American court, but its concept certainly does.
Yeah, because Google still shows up in Germany, right? So.
Now, here's the thing. Real lawyers came and really argued this, and it is real case law, completely unique, just happened, hadn't happened before. But what just happened in Mississippi is hilarious. So lawyers on
Oh.
both sides of a federal case were caught by the judge using incorrect citations, stuff that was never actually happened, precedent citations, law citations, etc., that were generated by artificial intelligence. Both sides did this. The judge caught both sides doing this, and the judge just kicked the case. The case, I think, is completely done. What was it? I don't even know what the case was all about.
Yeah, this is from 404 Media as well. I really love a lot of their stories.
Right.
So 404 Media has repeatedly covered this phenomenon of lawyers using AI to prepare their filings. And the specifics in this court case follow a similar pattern to what they said before. Lawyers from both sides cited non-existent hallucinated cases while making arguments. The difference is that every lawyer involved in the case is implicated, leading Aycock, the judge, to pause the proceedings, cancel the trial, disqualify all four lawyers involved. Two of the lawyers were barred from appearing before the court for 2 years. All lawyers received a fine between $1,000 and $3,500, and depending on who, their culpability. And you have to be really careful if you're a lawyer because all of a sudden there's all these AI tools out there for lawyers. Another one launched today. I just noticed because we work with a lawyer, but yeah, lawyers are getting disbarred, and lawyers are like in this case. Like it's a big deal, right? So, but all of them in the case were responsible. It wasn't just like one.
Are you talking about, I think it's Anthropic's contract extension?
No, there was something else, but I didn't see that one. So this is a different thing.
I was going to say, if
Those tools
lawyers
were
are
lawyers.
using that, you're insane. If you're a small business and you're using it to get a quick idea of what might be in a contract before taking it to your lawyer, so at least you know the language you're speaking, that's not a necessarily a bad use of but if you're a lawyer replacing your own expertise and knowledge using Anthropic's new contract reader, or I imagine the law citation extension that Christine's mentioning. That's probably a terrible idea.
And also, you have to be careful. Every state has different rules. Bars have different rules. So, if you're doing using a GPT and discussing law with it about a client, it's not secure, and that can actually also be used in court. As it's been ruled in
Yeah, absolutely.
multiple courts that it is not private communications. So you're talking about a private communication on something that can't be privately communicated. And then there's
So,
also server rules and all sorts of things. So if you're a lawyer, don't just use these tools without knowing what environment you're in legally.
well, basically, what you're saying is a AI knowledge base is a public space.
Yeah, there's been
You
a
can't
lot of
protect it.
cases. Yeah, there's been a lot of cases in court now where someone has talked on a GPT and argued that it was private because it was, just them on their computer with the GPT. But because they are training models and their models and all the other things that go into them, they have been ruled against them and have said that they are not private and that they are fair game, just like your Facebook communications can be used in court. In fact, for a while there, that was the number one thing used in divorce cases, was your Facebook posts and messages. So it's the same thing. Lawyers have to be really careful because they're being hyper targeted right now for all these tools. But a lot of these tools put you outside your the laws of confidentiality with your clients. And also, you could be using it in a way that's not safe because you're not on the proper server or don't have the proper sandboxes. So just make sure what your state is and what bar you have. And don't ever use AI stuff to go into court. Hallucinations. So one thing I don't think a lot of people understand, hallucinations happen because it doesn't have enough training data to repeat the pattern that it's expected to repeat. Instead of just saying, I don't have the information, or I can't do this, it makes it up. And that is why hallucinations, you're never really sure where they're going to be because you don't know everything you're trained on, right? So the hallucinations most often show up when it doesn't have enough training data to properly answer, instead of just saying, I don't know. There was a big debate there for a while. Like, why don't the companies just tell it to say, I don't know? But they don't do that. Oh.
Okay, so if you were caught, at least in the state of Mississippi, if the judge catches you, the using AI in your briefs or submitting AI something with AI into the court, you may get disbarred. Don't do it.
Yeah, and there are a lot of places now where you're not allowed to use AI in many aspects of law, or you will be disbarred automatically. So make sure that you check that in your state.
This one's kind of neat. This next story is kind of neat. Claude is starting its move in the search game. It's starting to refer traffic to websites. It's apparently the fastest growing AI traffic source, although it's still the lowest of the traffic sources.
It's still tiny, tiny. But
Well,
this is a Search Engine Journal, Search Engine Journal article.
for the longest time, I don't think Claude was actually training on the open web. When you'd ask it a question about a specific website, it often would actually say, I've not trained on this, I don't know. Like literally it would say exactly that. I've not trained on this, I don't know. Now it's returning information. So
Yes.
it's obviously training on the open web.
By the way, just to give you an idea why you have to be careful in this space now, because like clients will be like, oh, their Google's just crashing, right? It's like, no, Google's still 95% of the search traffic. But Claude Share Traffic, an SE rankings data set, which is a tool that did a study, grew 386%. And it
Wow, that's a
sounds
lot, Christine.
huge. It grew from 0.0029% in January to 0.141% in April. That's a 386%.
0.0141%.
Sorry, I zero, yes,
I mean,
0.5
it's hard
there.
with all those zeros in there for sure.
Yes. And all AI platforms combined accounted for 0.33% of traffic in April, up from 0.1976.
So 0.33% in April.
Yes. So what people don't understand is I'll hear like, oh, it can convert so much better on large language models. Yes, that can happen, especially in e-commerce, because getting all the information. Problem is the traffic is the last stat I looked at, all combined have the traffic 1/350th of Google. So you maybe get a 10% conversion. You don't ignore it because you're getting some sales, but you're not getting Google traffic. Because I did have a client say, do we need to just forget Google? Because like it's crashing, right? And I'm like, no, it's still 95% of what we do. And Bing is 5% of what we do too. So there's like this tiny fraction that's large language models.
Now we
So
have to remember in that what Christine said is absolutely right, although there is a what's the right word? A wild card, and that's mentions. People can see a brand name or
that's
they
true.
can read a concept and it gets into their head and they take no action whatsoever because it was an AI overview or an AI mode answer. They got what they wanted, they left. And it got stuck in their head. And if they do that over and over and over again, maybe they will be prompted to take some action when it comes time to make a purchase decision sometime down the road. That's the wild card that digital marketers can't really qu quantify. And it's out there, But that doesn't put clicks on your website or put stuff through your e-com engine.
And to give personal anecdotal evidence of that, because a client we're working with, they will get mentioned. They're the recommended like group for the service that they rank and not rank for, but show up for. So that's not informational, which is even worse, like publishers. So it'll be like 45,000 impressions, 50 clicks. 100,000 impressions, 40 clicks. So they're not getting clicks. Branding is very important. And so you definitely don't want to ignore the large language models, but you definitely don't also want to shift your budget from your organic SEO, which is at the base of all large language model search, including outside of Google, to large language models. Large language models should just be a small percent of your budget that you add to what you're already doing for SEO and you tweak in certain areas. It never should be a replacement.
Well, you downplayed what I think was really the keyword phrase that is part of your SEO strategy, that I
Yes.
think is actually the key phrase there.
Yeah, it's definitely part of SEO. There are people still argue. Well, fortunately, GEO as a term is dying. That was created by someone who was trying to take over our industry, Mark Anderson. But it's AI search. But there was a time when we had 10 search engines. So it's just another search engine, basically. It has a slightly different rules of the game, but all of the tactics fall under SEO. So I may do more PR now than I would in the past. Because we used to get links was most important. Now citations are very important, equal to links, if you're doing the large language model, the AI search. So then you want to have some money go there. But it was always part of SEO. It was not like different. Local is far more different than large language model searches, AI searches.
Well, again, which is why locals doing so much of the heavy lifting in the actual search results.
Exactly. And but I'm just saying, like, it's when people
So
are
much more
like,
relevant.
it's a whole new field. I'm like, no, it's all basically the same tactics, just applied and tweaked differently. And local is still under SEO, and it is very different than regular SEO. So,
I see what you mean. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But
yeah.
it's part of the same big field, indeed.
Same field, yeah.
Okay. So anyway, Claude is now training on the web and it is now driving traffic to websites. How much traffic? Well, not actually a lot, even though it's a 386% increase.
Yes, at 0.014%, something like that.
Okay, speaking of the power of big absurd numbers, Google is giving SpaceX almost $1 billion, 920 million a month for a computing power deal. It's going to bring about 30 billion to SpaceX and the companies under SpaceX. The deal comes ahead of the IPO that came down today and was probably made specifically to make the IPO look awfully enticing.
There's also something else, and oh my gosh, I feel like now I need to go take finance classes because all this stuff affects our world more than it ever has. So I can't explain this very well, but apparently there's like new money in the stock market and regular money, and like new money means they're creating like value where it didn't exist before.
Yes.
And Google is creating, even though it's a $1 trillion company or maybe 2 trillion, is creating a new area where it's trying to build investment in the AI portion, the data center AI chips portion that they're working on. And apparently that's way more risky than regular like stock market stuff. So unfortunately, I apologize to people. I am not being specific because I do not understand it well enough yet. I didn't get a chance to do a deep dive. But apparently Google is now playing in spaces that no one would ever think it had to, because it's a $1 trillion company that has everything. It has the chips, it has the data centers, it has the supplies, it has the servers, it has the engineer, it has everything it needs to do this. But they're doing a new type of investment that is much more volatile.
Yeah, I'd understood that Google was going to try to raise a whole bunch more money on the market. It was going to sell it another percentage of itself. I didn't know that it was doing it in any special way, or any different way. But the valuations that companies need to hit to stay in this game are beyond reason. I remember for years, back 10 years ago, when Dave was still on the show, and we were watching us go from when 100 million was a lot of money to 1 billion being a lot of money to 80 billion being matter, of course. And I was just boggling at how quickly this was growing. And Christine, I mean, like now we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars in investment, in new investment every show.
Also, I want to read this little part. This is from social media today. They're actually really good for reporting on things like this. It kind of gives you the essence of what we're talking about. So it's talking about the valuation of 1.8 trillion for SpaceX. This is a short like blurb. That's also a record high valuation. For context, SpaceX generated 18.67 billion in 2025, up from 14 billion in 2024. That would mean at the 1.8 trillion valuation, SpaceX would be set to be valued at 94 times its intake. As such, SpaceX valuation is placing an absurd amount of trust in owner Elon Musk's ability to make the impossible happen. And I'm saying impossible emphatically for a reason, with Musk projecting huge gains on orbital data centers and eventual space travel. None of these things have proven possible or viable. I read a whole science article about why orbital data centers would never work. Things like gravity come in play. Yet Musk's reputation and professional connections enable him to command a premium on the share price, which is why SpaceX is set to receive such a high valuation.
You know, if we were willing to lose maybe a city every couple of decades as this big data center comes down, like
Yeah,
Skynet did
right.
once, or Skylab did once, I don't see why that's not feasible. Heck,
It's
it's
just
very
kind
cool
of
up in space.
Crazy. Like, we change all the laws so they can make all this money on something they made 14 billion last year and is
And
valued at
unfortunately,
1.8 trillion.
what we can't change are laws like physics.
No, that's why I did read articles, but the science article broke down. Like, why? I don't remember everything about it at this point, but why it can't work. Like, literally, physics will not allow the data center to work. And maybe they
Although,
develop something that allows them to, but he's already clustered so much of low orbit space. There's not a lot of room left in low orbit space.
that is true.
Yeah.
But you know what? SpaceX does own that cluster that
It
is
does.
clustered up low at low orbit space.
It does.
And
And Starlink.
the optimist here might say, we can't change the laws of physics, but our understandings of the laws of physics will change over time.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Magic. Anyway, that's why this is
Well,
such a possibly bumpy road coming up, is like it made 14 billion. It's valued at 1.8 trillion. 94 times its intake, with no projections on how it's going to bring in 94 times, except orbital data centers and space travel. So, which costs massive amounts of money on the output. So I don't know how much intake they're going to bring in. So anyway, yeah.
I think part of all the overall we're going to get to this valuation is colonizing Mars too, which probably isn't happening anytime soon. Although I
No.
understand Elon Musk wants to die on Mars, and I, for one, am all for that.
I'm fine with it too. Yeah, I read a whole scientific article on that too. And they said the technology would take at least 70 years if it accelerated at a quick rate to be able to colonize Mars. So,
Oh, I thought you read the article about Elon Musk dying on Mars. It was really short. It went like this.
no one can see Jim because we
Okay.
are an audio show, but he just made a funny face.
Okay. Coming back down to Earth, okay. Publishers, a group of publishers called the Digital Content Next Coalition, have sent the Common Crawl Foundation a cease and desist letter demanding it stop scraping and distributing publisher content. Now, Common Crawl is a lot like the DMOS database used to be. DMOS used to be a directory that every 3 months would download this database of the web as DMOS knew it. And that was often the kernel for most search engines. Every search engine in existence got its copy of the DMOS database every 3 months because it helped them update their understanding of the web. That's what the Common Crawl Foundation is like now. It's a large database of websites that you can access. The U.S. trade group representing major digital publishers, including the Murdoch Publishers, the AP, New York Times, BBC, NPR, Bloomberg, NBC Universal, Paramount, etc. They've also asked Common Crawl to remove them and their members' content from its databases, including paywall and subscriber-only news articles. The problem isn't Common Crawl itself. It's that Common Crawl is wide open to AI crawlers.
Yeah, and let's also say almost every major AI large language model trained using Chrome and Curl. So yeah, there's a couple small ones I think that didn't, but it has petabytes of web pages, tests, and metadata from the public internet.
The thing that bothers me is Common Crawl is there for you to use, Christine. It's there for me to use. It's there for all of us. If it's there to make it so that Google isn't the only one, or Microsoft aren't the only ones who control this vast amount of information. But we're not allowed to have nice things because not so nice people will come and exploit them.
Well, basically, I mean, I don't know, this is what happened, but this is how I envision it because I've been in corporations. They went to the lawyers and said, "What can we do to get this data? Because we can't do the things that are copyrighted." And it said, "Oh, wow, there's this thing called Common Crawl. Can we do that? There's no law against it to do what you do yet because you're new. So we'll go ahead and do it and we'll catch up with the law later. And that point will be so ubiquitous, the law won't matter."
There you
That's
go.
usually how that happens, and it has happened here.
That's exactly how it goes down, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And once the horse is out of the barn, it's really hard for the law to put the horse back in the barn.
And have to destroy the models, which would be a whole, because they make so much money now. Well, I don't make money, but they IPO at a lot of money. It would be
According
hard
to
to say destroy them. Go ahead.
Mozilla, the Mozilla Foundation, in a paper they published in 2024, generative AI wouldn't be possible without Common Crawl.
This is true. Yeah, because it was the largest public data source. And oh, by the way, the search engine land, if we didn't say it, I don't know if we said it or not.
So again, the problem that the Digital Content Next Coalition has isn't actually with Common Crawl. It's just that Common Crawl is the gateway to all their stuff.
Yeah, and they also did say that they don't believe that they were honoring the opt-out requests like to the T, or and removing older content when asked. That doesn't mean they weren't, but that's part of their case. So it may just been not nefarious, but just like it's a lot to manage, petabytes worth of internet data. So
Well,
they
not just
didn't.
that. I mean, Christine, you understand this. Once it's gone, once the crawlers have come to get it out of your database, it's gone. You can't control it anymore, even if you want
No.
to.
Well, yeah, because you can't remove anything from a large language model.
So you
Can't
can
the
Common
model has
Crawl.
to be destroyed. So yeah, they can't remove anything. So yeah.
So Common Crawl might get around to removing that from its database, remembering this is a volunteer organization that relies on the goodness of other people to get stuff done. Where the large language models are all represented by multi-million dollar, $100 million corporations, as is each of the members of the Digital Content Next coalition.
Yeah.
In fact, the smallest one in this entire cluster is the Common Crawl Foundation.
Yeah, that's true.
So we're not allowed to have nice things as the
No.
people. We the people. Whenever anybody gives us something nice, like, I don't know, the Wayback Machine, some big corporate fuzzy wuzzy comes and takes it away from us. It ain't
Yeah,
fair.
there's truth to that because the Internet Archive has been having struggles too, so
Well, I mean, like,
yeah.
that's the business model now, is to take what used to be really good about the public space and commodify it. Dating apps aren't about meeting somebody. Dating apps are about the frustration of almost meeting somebody. And so the dating corporations, the what's his name? Oh my goodness, he's like Robert Murdoch, but anyway, though the some we've taken what was good about the public space, commodified it, and made people feel bad so they'll come back for more. It's a terrible thing. We're doing the same
Is.
thing with information now. With human thought, for goodness sake.
Which probably is interesting. I don't know if you read this week, but Gen Z, we already talked about on the show, is rejecting the AI models and technology. To be a cool kid in Gen Z right now, you are analog, which makes sense because their parents are Gen X. But that's like the cool kid, like came out this week, like in the new survey, that the cool kids are the analog kids who barely touch digital stuff. I
Well,
don't know where
good.
all this is going to go because the next generation has already said, we out. Not just we don't want it, we might not use it. Like, we if we touch grass and have experiences and like maybe take a picture, that's cool. That's all we need. So it'll be interesting to see where all this goes in 10 years.
The cool kid will be able to tell me what 10 to 10 looks like on a clock.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, which I think is great.
Okay. Amazon is turning Alexa into a shopping agent and, of course, an attendant advertising platform.
Of course. That's really what you
So
support.
over at my partner Shauna's place, we use Alexa extensively. I mean, there's our music inventory. We use it to turn the TV every once in a while. We use it to find out what the weather is like outside. And now, I think now we're going to be using it to do our shopping. Is it grocery shopping?
Yeah, it's going to be so it's conversational AI. And agentic shopping are now part of going to be part of Amazon. I'm not sure if it's on the app. It looks like it's on the app in addition to just Alexa, but it doesn't really say it in the article. But the screenshots are of the app, so that's what I was wondering. So for the advertisers, existing sponsored ad campaigns are automatically eligible to appear in Alexa for shopping, while conversational ad formats can help brands to engage customers through the buying journey. I don't do a lot with Amazon. I just do a little, but I do find like some of their AI summaries are helpful in shopping because they use them very, slightly. They don't take over everything, and it'll say like people are saying this, which is helpful.
You know how they get that? This is for real. You know who the brains behind Alexa is? Gemini.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that.
So all that cool stuff they're doing, including this agentic shopping thing, that's all a Google thing. They're just doing it with they're just like white labeling it, slapping a smile face on it, and now it's Amazon.
That's interesting. I had forgotten about that. So the by the numbers, more than 300 million people used Rufus, the weird name for their AI, in 2025. The company says nearly 20% of shoppers who interact with the sponsored brands prompt continue the conversation about that brand, while prompts drive a 6% increase in conversions. So.
Okay, but for what it's worth, when your Alexa unit starts talking back to you, you talk about the brand you were just talking about, and the Alexa does sass back at you specifically to get you to talk back to it. I'm positive that's what it's doing.
Probably is. Probably does. I'm sure they gamify it.
Oh, indeed,
Yeah,
indeed.
you do that.
It does make it very pleasant. And but my partner has a seizure disorder, and because
Yeah.
of that, sometimes she gets scrambled, and this could very well be a lifesaver for her,
Yeah,
this
definitely.
kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely good for someone with disabilities for sure.
Okay, so again, every caveat and warning: if you're using agentic tools, you're probably diving into something larger than you realize. You may be handing over control of your banking information, your personal data, or what have you, to an amorphous, I'm not even sure if it's a corporation, a data center, or a combination of a bunch of things, which is probably a combination of a bunch of things. But it may be useful in a bunch of different circumstances. So,
Yeah, you just have to be careful. The best thing to do is use them in like sandboxes, meaning like you have a special tablet or computer where you have usage agent things, never leave them running in the background ever.
by the way,
So,
quick entrepreneur tip: if you want to make a gajillion dollars, create that space for the average person in their
yeah,
own home.
that's very true. That would be fantastic because as we're going to cover a story here in a minute, the agents, there's a paper that came out just yesterday. Or at least published on LinkedIn, and I can never say the name, the X A X I R, the journal where we all
Azure.
these,
I'm sorry.
no, the journal, the journal where they publish all these tech research in. So there was a it
Ars
might have
Technica?
been no, it's not a news site. It's the journal, like the
Okay.
pub. It's the what am I trying to say? The research journal, and it's AX. IR, VIR, something like that. I can never say it. So, anyway, they came out with a study that shows that they, again, this isn't the first study, but it's just a continuing study. I think it was from MIT, that they cannot be protected fully. There is no way to protect them fully. You have to monitor, you have to guardrails, you have to have sandboxes, you have to have secure servers, you have to do all these things if you're a company, which most people don't do at home. And all of these companies right now are going, agents, agents, use the agents. Agents are great. You can use the agents. And you have to be careful because there's no regulation right now. So they're not safe like that. And
Well, here's
again,
it.
never leave them running in the background and never cook them up to your bank
To
account.
add to what you're saying, not only do you do does a large corporation such as Microsoft have to make sure that all of its battens are attached. I'm sorry, all of its hatches are closed and battened down and stuff. You gotta be aware of every area that you are digitally active in. For instance, Microsoft has had to shut down a bunch of its own repositories on GitHub,
Yes.
including a bunch of Azure and AI coding agents, because it was a data breach, and hackers planted malware that would harvest people's credentials when they opened it in AI, in a coding tool like Claude Code or in Gemini CLI. So hackers hid prompts in GitHub docs relating to Azure and AI coding agents, and those prompts harvested people's credentials when they opened when they opened those GitHub docs in certain coding tools.
Yeah.
Microsoft mightn't have thought of that extension of themselves out there at GitHub and probably in a gajillion other places on the web. That's what they got to be thinking of moving forward in the agentic world.
And by the way, this is from 404 Media. But well, they've been having a problem for a while. Remember Claw, the first Claude, CLAW, went in and when it went crazy and started just making nefarious commits to GitHub. And then hackers have been using it to put in prompts. And now this is actually Microsoft's own GitHubs that got affected. So you've got to be really careful on GitHub because it may just be a prompt that starts the infection of the system that it's on. So you have to be very careful of just agents in general.
And this proves it can be done. One proves and this yet again proves it can be done.
Yeah, yet again, because we know we've done so many stories over the last year. I saw people in Mexico who lost all their 150 million records through a chatbot that talked to another chatbot that convinced it to give it full privileges so they could take everything. So, and we're telling people, I'm really concentrating on this, and I know you are too, because, like we're going to say in a minute, Google's putting out a whole shopping, I'm not shopping, but whole agent thing in Chrome, and we already know it's vulnerable to being attacked. So.
Okay. We're just going to gloss over this one really quickly.
Yeah, it's really quick. It's just funny.
Quick acronym for the new breakout of IPOs. We're going Mango, Meta,
Instead
Anthropic,
of Fang.
NVIDIA,
Yeah.
Google, OpenAI, and SpaceX. Yeah, before it was Fang, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google. Now it's all about AI, Meta,
Google,
Anthropic,
right?
NVIDIA, Google, OpenAI, and SpaceX.
Yes.
Mangoes.
Mangoes. Fang and mangoes. It wasn't Netflix. You said that by accident. So I
Oh,
think
I
the
mean,
end of
by mistake.
Fang is NVIDIA, I think. I have to check. But anyway, yeah, now it's mangoes too. So when someone says those mangoes, they're talking about companies, probably, not fruit, unless you're in Mexico.
WebMCP can be used to hijack AGI agents. Chrome warns that Chrome's WebMCP guidance, Chrome's WebMCP guidance warns that AI agents can be manipulated through the tools that they are built to trust. Quickly, a web model context protocol is proposed is a browser standard API allowing websites to expose features as structured tools to AI agents. So instead of like scraping DOM scraping, agents are interacting deterministically one by one via exposed JSON schemas. So don't have to scrape the entire site, just have to go to the one application that needs to be done and complete that task. But that's hijackable, big time.
And there's two main primary attack vectors. Manifest, which is the, by the way, this is Roger Monti at Search Engine Journal. Manifest is the information that describes WMCP tools, WebMCP tools, sorry, and the website functions to an AI agent. The manifest describes what the website functions are called, what they do, what the inputs are, so the agents can discover and use them. Contaminated output is information returned by the WebMCP tool that contains malicious instructions. So they can use a combination of these things. Chrome says AI models cannot reliably stop prompt injection. And I'm just going to read this briefly because this applies to every single agent out there and all large language models. LLMs treat all text, instructions, and user data as a single sequence of tokens. This means that they're susceptible to indirect prompt injection and inclusion of malicious instructions by an attacker. While some models include safety layers against prompt injection, the probabilistic nature of LLMs make it impossible to guarantee safety inside the model itself. Security researchers have repeatedly demonstrated prompt injection attacks against agentic systems that use state-of-the-art LLMs, and the prevalence of attacks on the web is increasing. And the more big companies push these out and become very large attack surfaces, the more interested those who will be nefarious will be to use them. So right now they're doing big things like the Mexican government, and they haven't done your little individual computer, and you're using Claude or Gemini or whatever because you're too small and it doesn't matter. That's why Macs didn't used to get hacked years ago. There weren't enough of them for them to care. The bigger the surface becomes, the more the payload becomes interesting to those who want to attack it. So,
What advice do we have to protect yourself? Don't play the game. That's the only advice.
really,
Otherwise, be
yeah.
incredibly careful. Check everything twice. Check your credit scores frequently. Check your bank statements frequently. Like, this might be a daily thing you're doing from now on.
Get notifications. Yeah. So real quick though, Chrome does suggest setting token limits on tool responses. So don't have a token cap if you have a model, because otherwise they could use your model and run up your token bill. Restricting cross-origin interactions. This is something only like developers and stuff are gonna be able to talk to you about. But basically, I'm going from this domain to another domain and able to interject between the two. And then requiring user confirmation before actions are taken, recognizing handling content marked as untrusted.
Okay, Meta is stepping back. It had a facial recognition application in an AI app that was actually attached to the Meta glasses that people are wearing now. Freaked the heck out of like anyone who didn't want to get stalked or who thinks stalking's a bad thing,
Yeah.
and the company is removing the Face ID functionality.
For
From the
now.
backhand code of its glasses, for now, but keep
But
on
they've
them
done
and
it
maybe
before.
forever.
Yeah, they did it before. They got a lot of pushback, so because they are very interested in having that information. So keep an eye on that. Keep pushing back. If you push back hard enough, they will usually take the step back.
Well, here's
Meta
the thing.
will go
They
ahead.
will introduce the product with it in it and wait for you to
Yeah.
push back on them
Yes,
and then
yeah.
remove it.
That's such a dangerous product because facial recognition would be telling you information about the person, not just like their name, but where they lived. Like there was an audio of this. It is very dangerous, especially for women and
Oh,
children.
it, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's the last vestige of anonymity or privacy one might have in the public space would be gone with this.
Yes,
And
100%.
the implications of what creeps could use this for, what thieves could use this for, what jealous boyfriends could use this for. It's
Or just
terrifying.
grifters. They could find out enough
Grifters, yeah.
information, yeah, to try to get you to give them account information or things of that nature. Also, Meta will use offsite activity to customize feed and AI responses. Meta has done this for many, many years, I think probably 20 years, where they use you're not on there. They used to have information about people who weren't even logged in, and then they got taken to court and that stopped. So Meta is adding now the AI component to it. It's kind of creepy, that they do this, but it's not
They're
new.
going to know what websites you've been to and what you did there, and then they're going to use that to enhance your algorithmic experiences.
Yeah, like it'll know
So
websites you visited, what you looked at, what you bought, other details. And it's called a personal super intelligence. I don't know if you
personal
can turn it
super
off. I don't think you
intelligence.
can. Yeah.
Yay.
Yay, so much fun.
Okay. If you want, there are new ways to disable the Copilot Microsoft to AI, stop responses from showing up and being search results. A new browser extension available for Chrome and for Edge that you can install to toggle off showing AI responses. And the coolest thing about this is these tools are being given to you by Microsoft's Bing itself.
Yes, and if you're not sure you want DuckDuckGo because maybe that it's not a sophisticated enough browser for you, Bing has a much cleaner space than Google, and they're much better about how they handle their AI. They make it less obtrusive. Now you can turn it off.
That's
So,
intrusive indeed.
yeah, exactly. Now you can turn it off. So, if you're looking for an alternative, as we know some people are, by the way, DuckDuckGo didn't just go up 30%. Their subscriptions or their users went up 70% over the next few weeks after Google first rolled out the AI, new AI stuff. So, anyways, yeah. So, Bing is actually a pretty good alternative as long as I don't try to copy Google. I think they have a chance to really gain some traffic in this space.
Good news, maybe for now. Google Chrome will not set AI mode as the default search experience. They had planned to, but they're pulling
No,
back on those plans.
actually, they didn't plan to.
They did,
But if
so
you,
they're lying.
well, it
So
was in
I don't
Kinnear.
believe this. I'm sorry.
I
I'm reading. I
agree.
don't believe it.
It's in, yeah, they said, I should say they said. It was in Canary. It wasn't in regular Chrome. Canary is like a different form of Chrome. And Rajan
Named for a
Patel,
reason.
yes, that's true. Rajan Patel was said on, I think it was Twitter, X, that it was an error and they were not planning to make AI mode the default for Chrome searches.
We didn't mean for you all to think that. I don't know what would have given you that impression. Like,
You know
but
that.
it's not happening.
You know why they hate the SEO industry? Every time something happens, like maybe they're just testing it and don't think anyone will notice. Someone in this industry always finds out and then publishes it to everybody else in this industry. And we all have follower accounts and suddenly it's a news story. Which is
Okay.
funny. Because if they were just testing Canary, like, oh, no one will know. No one will tell.
OpenAI is allowing ChatGPT ad managers, or allowing through it. I screwed that one right up. OpenAI has upgraded its ChatGPT ad manager tool, allowing advertisers to upload product feeds that will automatically create ads for each uploaded product. Basically, OpenAI is making up ads based on the information from the feed on the fly.
OpenAI's ad management and dashboard is not a full tool yet. It hasn't grown up yet. It's like still like a toddler, maybe a teenager. So I would wait until they get everything rolled out. They're rolling out in piecemeal over the last 3 months. So before you invest any real money, though you can test it, you know, and see if it works for you. But I wouldn't invest a lot of money until they finished it all.
Again. But apparently it reduced cost per click by 50%, and doubled click-through rate. Mind you, that was probably the AI itself reporting on it on itself.
Yeah, probably. Also, Google's numbers for their ad stuff is always very generous. So.
Okay. Rand Fishkin is finding himself in the search news a lot recently. SparkToro is releasing a lot of data, doing a lot of studies, and the most recent one shows that about 23% or 232 clicks out of 1,000 Google searches actually go to the open web, not actually through Google. Data from SparkToro and SimilarWeb shows that 68% of US searches end without any click activity at all. This is from January through April 2026. In 2024, 360 open web clicks per 1,000 Google searches were reported. So 39% of searches end with no further action, 29% lead to a new query in Google's search bar, 32% produce a click. Of those 32%, 66% lead searches to a page on the open web, while 27% go to Alphabet-owned properties and other Google surfaces, YouTube, Maps, AI mode, something like that. The remaining 6% goes to PPC, paid ads.
I will say though, and I don't know if they have a bigger like report, but it's gonna be vary based on things like, are you an informational site? Are you an e-commerce site? Like if you're informational or you're a news site, it's all in the AI overview. But if you're e-commerce, they have to still finish on your website for now until agentic shopping is a big thing. So I think it's gonna vary greatly. Like our client has gone up 300% in traffic on their most main terms, and they're in all the AI overviews for everything they need to be. But when they actually, but we also see things like 100,000 impressions and 50 clicks. So it's not that you can't get traffic or it's not possible, but if you're an informational site, you're likely to move the most, lose the most traffic in this situation.
I was gonna say I'm betting that you've gained traffic. Certainly, you're certainly seeing more clicks, but I bet you your click-through rates declined.
No, it hasn't.
Really?
But again, this is a service. So they have to finish on the site at some point if they want the service. So,
Okay.
yeah.
Quick, an important thing to note here: in 2024, SparkToro reported about 36% open web clicks through Google. This year, they're only reporting 23.2%. So that's quite a drop over the last couple of years. That's mainly because of AI overviews, straight up click-through declines. AI overviews is showing up on about 20% of searches now, and click-through rates are usually 60% or so lower when AI and an AI overview appears.
Yeah, which makes sense. And we've talked about this before, but it's mostly about the design of the page, why they lose so many clicks. Like Bing's is much more friendly for getting clicks to websites and publishers. And Google's is basically designed not to encourage you to click. So.
This, I think we're reporting a bug in Google business profiles, Christine. I'm not sure about that, but Google seems to have added WhatsApp phone numbers to tons of Google business profiles automatically over the last week.
And WhatsApp as well. You said WhatsApp.
I'm sorry,
Yeah,
WhatsApp is WhatsApp.
it's okay. I just want to make sure people didn't think we were talking about Bugs Bunny. They've been adding them without permission or to verifying. And so if it's the wrong number, it doesn't work, it's an old number, it's not what you want on there, you can't remove it at this time. So hopefully it will be either, like you said, a bug and fixed, or that they'll offer a way for you to fix it. That would really sting. People are
So
using your
actually,
WhatsApp.
Google probably did this on purpose without thinking of the implications of what it was doing.
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
Okay, here's a neat one. Google's Gemini is going to be doing some of the lighter lifting or the more annoying lifting with your Google business profiles. It's hard to keep up Google business profiles, eh? Gemini is going to be able to interact with a Google Business Profile, help you manage business hours, food menus, media, business attributes, contact information, action links, location details, customer reviews. Oh, you'll be able to help get Gemini to help you manage customer reviews, to review replies, and to even make posts on your profile, like offer, update, or event posts.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be pretty handy. We'll see if it works as well in the application or implementation of it. But definitely, although I wouldn't search keywords.
Well, no,
That's
don't
the only
choose your
thing.
keywords or nothing. No. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Think of all the information Google gets about a business or an entity through Google Business Profiles. Just tremendous amount of information that Google gets and can give to users. And this is why I keep saying that that Business Profiles is carrying so much weight at Google right now. I mean, honest to goodness, it's by far the most interesting part of the search engine.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
I
But we'll
think
see. It
just
seems it seems like it'll be helpful, for people, and it's conversational as well.
it's just again that's so much of the drudge work could be taken over, and it will if there could be standardization and improvement to all of Google business profiles across the board, that could be such a powerful information tool.
Yeah, very much so.
Okay, rejected Google review replies. There's hidden rejections.
Yes, this is a search engine roundtable. It's in a new study that's been released that looks at the review replies that have been rejected by Google.
Excuse me?
Business owners takes the time to reply to customer reviews, and then Google deletes them. And often the business owner has no idea the reply was deleted because Google does not notify anybody. They just remove the review. So the study is from GMB App API. I was like reading it like GMBAPI. It's API. This is it looked at 12,752 rejected review replies. 92.6% were five-star reviews, replies to a five-star review. Positive reviews are generating the most rejections, almost certainly because the businesses and AI tools respond to them with templated or enthusiastic language. By the way, do not use, I know Google lets you, but don't use AI to respond to people. Rejection spiked sharply in 2024, 354 rejections in all of 2022, and 398 in 2023. 9,393 in 2024 alone.
92.6%. You know what this suggests? Google's rejecting them because it takes too much information. It takes too much energy for them to convey that someone said thank you.
Yeah, possibly.
I
I
mean, what
also
else? I
think.
mean, like, someone just said you were the coolest SEO ever. What do you say back to that except thank you? Yes, I am.
Yeah. Also, it jumped from 300 and what was it, 58, 398 to 9,393 in a year, which tells me there is AI involved and it is not doing things properly. AI is always risky in these kind of situations because nobody can tell you it's not working properly. As I said, they get removed and nobody knows why, and Google never informs them. So the average rejected reply was written, I'm not sure I'm reading this right, was written 1,221 hours, roughly 50 days after the original review was posted. Okay. So it was roughly 50 days after it was posted that the replies and everything was rejected and removed. So they don't really have any more information on that, just the report. But it is an interesting and kind of probably horrible thing for people who are dealing with it. And it was Michael von Lucitella. No, I did that wrong. Of GMB API, who wrote about this on LinkedIn.
Okay. I'm now going to try to find that name just so I can try to do it myself. Before
Yes.
we do that, this one is fun. Schema.org is adding usage statistics for different schema types. So
I
if you
like this.
ever wonder, I love this too. This is I mean, this is just almost like SEO trivia. But it actually might help you choose the right type to pursue on your page.
Yeah, exactly. If more people are using it, you'll be able to know. Or maybe you'll be using something you didn't think of. You see one and you're like, oh, I didn't know like a million sites are using this. So let me give it a try. So remember, Schema is not just for Google. Google uses rich Schema to show things like stars and reviews, but Schema is of the machine language of machine learning. So it can be very helpful. It's basically machine labeling.
So what it's going to show, basically, is how many domains that it's being used on.
Yeah.
At SE Roundtable, Barry pulls up two examples. One is an author schema, the other is an event schema. The author schema usage 10 million plus domains. So we don't know exactly how many. Because check out the event schema. 100,000 to 1 million domains are using event schema. Somewhere in between. What's a
Yeah.
few hundred thousand between friends, right?
Somewhere in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
So it's not an accurate number, but it tells us a little bit about usage numbers.
yeah, and it gives you probably some ideas when you're trying to think of creative schema on things that you could use because other people are using it. So I like it. This
Okay.
is a, oh, go ahead.
YouTube is bringing in-app sharing and messaging to American users, US, UK, Brazil, Singapore, and most of the US territories.
What's old is new again. They used to do this in the past and they took it away and now they brought it back.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't think there's much more to say about it. It's chat, it's messaging, it's in YouTube. You cannot use it
One.
though with it for a brand account though, by the way.
Okay, so if you try to abuse it, you're probably getting burned.
Yeah, and you can't use it if you're like Wendy's. So.
Oh, Wendy always finds a way. Okay, this one's cool too. Google's updated with new documentation on third-party SEO tools, services, and advice. Google wants you to ask some very, very serious questions when evaluating an SEO that you might be working with, SEO tools, or just advice that you might want to follow. Critical thinking skills, and not exactly what Claude or OpenAI tells you.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It says Google said to ask these questions and they're not actually questions.
I was wondering that. I think they
Yeah.
had AI write this for them.
Yeah, I think they have a lot of AI right stuff because we know it's all so positive and enthusiastic. But it
They
said
think they want you to
assisting.
watch out for.
Yeah, and it said three these questions, none of them, not one's a question, but the one I was like, this is like black boxing it though, right? Like providing advice, they claim they'll improve your ranking of your existing content. Well, that's what SEOs do. Improve your
And that's what
visibility.
most of our auditing tools do.
Yeah,
Thing
even
is,
Google's.
we look at the output of the auditing tools and evaluate that before passing it on to the client.
But this is a weird thing. Like, I feel like they're trying to go back to like 2004 when they always made it sound like, oh, nobody can help you with us. It's all a secret. And it's like,
Okay.
SEOs with like 20 years experience, like me and Jim has more than I do, We exactly don't know the algorithms, but we do have an idea how they work. We have an idea what moves the algorithm. So,
Do you remember how cool it was when WordPress started making sitemaps for you?
And you didn't have to
So,
make it yourself.
yeah,
Yeah.
I remember it had to be 2007 in a hotel room in Calgary. I had a terrible cold. I had snot literally falling out my nose, and I
Ew.
had to do a 2000 product line sitemap, and it had to be done like in that weekend.
Yeah, no one will
It
remember
was horrible.
the thrill of putting an XML sitemap together on your own without tools to help you write it.
So,
So
Google,
real
if there's a tool that's doing this for me, I'm not going to be asking it a lot of questions. I'm probably going to be saying
Yeah.
thank you, although I will inspect its output because I'm responsible for what I give to my clients.
Now we do have issues where people are trying to sell things, and so they say things without knowledge. So Google, what Google said here, their little quote was, "Some of these services may be helpful in your work, while others may make claims or imply that they do what they do is somehow accepted or approved by Google search. Google doesn't evaluate third-party services, so be wary of such claims and those making them. Keep in mind, using a service or tool doesn't guarantee ranking success. Also, things like domain authority and all those." Those are tool names, but they're not Google words. And although people can have an idea of how the algorithms work, Google does not publish that information. So they're saying that in the fine details, but the question area is just a little weird because it's like offering to generate SEO optimized content for you. Generate is probably the keyword. They mean AI or something. But if I have a writer write the content that's not an SEO, I'm going to tell them how to optimize the content. That is very normal because you have to make sure the algorithms understand what the page is about.
I'm
So
preceded
it's a
by
weird list.
experience. If you have a writer who's experienced in SEO writing content, you're also gonna. That's sorry. Sorry about that.
That's true. But anyway, it's just like an interesting thing. So anyway, be careful when you use third-party tools, of course, and services. Anyone's promising you too much is probably not telling the truth. And things like prompt tracking tools right now are like, the same prompt can generate a different result and citation list on everybody who prompts it. So if you want to use it as a general idea, if you're got stuff in there, that's great, but don't use it like keyword ranking tools because it doesn't work that way.
And something to keep in mind, the SEO tool sets have evolved over decades. As when they're concentrating on their core competency as SEO tool sets, they've usually solved a lot of problems that they might have experienced in their infancy. But again, most of the major tool sets have been around for quite a while, and they've solved a lot of problems. The newer tool sets, the AI tool sets, they're in their problem solving phases right now. Some of the output is, very, very accurate, and some of it is not so accurate. So be really careful using them is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, a lot of what's being claimed is very iffy. So be very careful of that.
Now, it
So.
used to be like when do you remember when we had a whole bunch of dual sets? We had like those page speed guys before Google bought them. Moz had its own tool sets.
Yeah.
Crazy Egg had its tool sets, and you
Oh,
had all these
crazy.
competing. That was Neil Patel's
Yeah.
organization. You had all
I'd
this
just forgotten.
competing data out there, all these competing numbers, and people didn't know how to deal with them because one DA would be this and one DA would be that, and you'd have another person telling you that DI didn't mean anything in the first place. If you get a series of numbers that you're using, use a baseline and kind of go with that. It may or may not be entirely accurate, but at least it's your baseline. But if somebody else looks at you funny after you quote it, it may be it's not the strongest baseline, or it's just not the one that they're using.
And also, only compare your numbers inside a tool because every tool measures differently, and every tool has different type of like weights and measures based on what they're trying to help you with. So don't say like, "I got this." I think it's DR or DA or some two different tools. Authority signal in Ahrefs, and I got authority signal in Moz, and then one over here, Semrush. Do not compare those because they are not the same. They're not measured the same. But you can say, "I've got this authority signal 6 months ago in this tool, and now I have a much better one. So at least I know I improved if that signal happens to matter to you." So,
Okay. Google launched search profiles last week. This is so creators and publishers have a place to highlight content and platforms.
And this is the analytics, like they just rolled it out. So now you have some analytics and some basic information about your profile. So like top five posts on search ranked by most clicks, the number of visits from content from Google, impressions in top countries. So it's not a lot of data, but it's a little basic analytics. Also, these programs for creators for search profiles isn't for anybody. You have to have a certain number of followers on different platforms to be able to be eligible for it if you're a creator or influencer.
Google AI Mode is testing citation counts and favicons underneath results. So it's moving the result count, with the site's favicon, from above the citation and the link card to under or below the citation and link card when in
Yeah.
AI mode.
These always are just to me the stories we cover because it's different. You might wonder why, but I mean, I feel like the team is just proving it needs to exist. It's like if you look at it, it's not like a big change, it's like a tiny little
Well, it's not a big
version.
change, but if you see it on the screen, and it throws your eyes or it looks weird to you, this is why.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we report on it.
And a couple times as we're reporting this, we're just learning this ourselves.
Exactly. So Google Ads campaign guidance is out with Experiment PowerScore.
That's
So
kind of neat.
yeah, have you heard of an Experiment PowerScore before
I
today,
have
though? I've
not heard of an experiment PowerScore, but I've got to tell you. An experiment power score, which apparently is a 0 to 100% ranking, sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's for ads. This is in Search Engine Roundtable. You can read it at length here. But the basic idea is experiment power scores are to the author interesting to me. Google explained the factors involved in the score, and they include campaign selection, variability, traffic split, experiment duration, experiment type, and then that gives you three ranges, low, medium, and high. And then it helps you do better on your campaign. So if you're not doing it, you don't get a good score. It'll say, hey, here's where you could possibly do better on your campaign. Here's what you could improve. Here's what might be better for your ads to, do more for you. So it sounds like a good tool. I don't do ads, so I don't know for sure, but it does sound like it has a pretty interesting take to like suggest to you things that you could do better. Budgets, graphics, all those things.
Google Shopping thankfully is testing a direct link to merchant or retailer websites instead of just to product listing overlays within the Google Shopping result universe. So it used to be if you saw your pair of tennis shoes that you wanted to buy, instead of going to the tennis shoe store's website, you would just see the Google Shopping the product drawn from Google Shopping's database and put up with Google's skin, Google's platform overlay showing it. Google's going to give you a link to the website that hopefully will click you to their site. Google will open a new side panel that has more details from the product, and the site will actually get the click.
How crazy. Don't put Google in between the
You
person
know what
and the
this, but
click.
you know what I think this is probably for? This is probably so agents can find their way around.
Probably a good point. Yeah,
It's a
'cause
wayfinder to get them to that to where the database the product's actually coming out of, so Google's databases don't get overloaded.
yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's probably a good point because the hyperlink takes them to the page, so don't have to go through the
$5. This
Google.
is a way a wayfinder for an agent.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably true.
It probably solves a lot of problems for Google engineers too. Imagine carrying that load on your server.
Exactly. Chance for it. Cheap, lower the rate. Google Ads testing top pages links. It just means Google Ads at the top of the page might just have the, instead of the site links going down, might just have them across underneath. They do that on websites already. Where you just have like site links are listed below it. So I prefer that way because it's smaller. The site links on ads I always thought was kind of unfair because it takes up so much space on the page and away from organic. So,
Okay.
yeah.
Google is now testing dotted underline and shaded URLs in search snippets. Can you make it
Yeah,
easier since then?
and ads too. No, it's just dotted line. This is the ones where I'm like, they just were bored and needed to test something. Oh, they do it in ads as well. This is a dotted line. I don't know. It's gonna
Does it
make a
make stuff look
difference.
better, or is it easier to
Yeah.
see this way? It's
It
hard. I
actually
don't think
looks
it's easier.
not easier, and it clutters the page because it's a broken line everywhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not better. But these things usually don't last. They usually disappear after they run their test.
Well,
So.
you were talking about the site link portion of ads being too large. You got a problem
Yes.
with that? Because Google's about to throw images in them.
Yeah, except the site link, the images are to the side at least. They're small, the thumbnail size. So I don't have too much of an issue because it's just cluttery. Like, why do I need an image where it says like login, right? Or products? I don't, and that's on the ad site links. So it's even worse because I get to select them. So I don't know. It's again, Google often tests design just to see what the design's going to do. So I don't imagine that'll last a long time. Just not
Okay.
necessary. So.
This might be the weirdest story we tell you
It's
today.
so funny.
Like this one is weird, okay? Like I'm weird. So there's a lighthouse keeper named Elias Thorne. Except there isn't a lighthouse keeper named Elias Thorne. Elias is a character that was made up by chatbots. And he might be a clock master. He might be a lighthouse keeper, he could be a librarian. But if there's a hero in the story, chances are it's Elias Thorne. And ChatGPT, Gemini, and Claude are really obsessed with this guy. What's
Yeah, and
the
there's,
deal?
well, there's a couple other names too. So in this is 404 Media. Researchers Syl Hamilton and David Mimnill
Minmo.
at Cornell's Department of Information Science published their paper, Elias in the Lighthouse Again, on the preprint return. Here's the one I was talking about, ARXIV. I can never say it. So that journal we were talking about where you publish research. They sample 20,000 total stories from OpenAI's ChatGPT, Anthropic's Claude, and Google's Gemini, and the Allen Institute for AI's chatbot using five prompts, and found that the same 11 words, names like Elias, Mara, and Elara, and occupations like lighthouse keeper, clockmaker, and librarian appeared in more than 88% of the generated stories. By the way, if you're a teacher, this is really good information for you. So Unite.ai covered the story, and it was published. So they believe that it's just the theme show so often because the model safeties and alignment tuning. So for some reason, these names come up as like a protection mode. So it's like a family tree. It's used to make like a wild chat, a training set that's since been used to make other training sets. So wild chat contains 1 million real conversations with ChatGPT, and 166 of these contain the name Elias, like here and here. They're showing like links. Then Hamilton said, these are written in that familiar lighthouse style. Models trained on WildChat copied this style, and developers unwittingly replicated it using those models to generate newer data sets. It's like a virus or the snake eating its tail that we've talked about in the past, where something gets generated and it gets eaten up by the large language model and suddenly becomes prevalent and real. So it is kind of funny.
So
And if you're a teacher and you see Elias Thorne in your story, it probably was written by
by
ChatGPT
a ch oh my God,
or GPT, any
isn't that what a
GPT.
crappy way to get outed here, eh?
Right?
My
Yeah.
God, what a crappy way to get to get out of your teacher. So Elias Thorne is here because the bots are basically reading their own slop.
Yeah, pretty much snake eating the tail, and it's Elias, Mara, Alara, and some others, and occupations lighthouse keeper, clockmaker, and librarian in 88% of the generated stories with little difference between models.
So
So,
Elias, Mara, and Alara are all hanging
yeah,
out in the lighthouse together. You won't believe what happened next.
yes, with the clockmaker and the librarian. So I'm just saying, if you see Elias
Are there any
Thorne.
octopuses involved?
I don't think so. Although there's a good movie
Who
right now,
this then?
Sally Fields is out with an octopus. Anyway, so they're all written in this wild, but it's amazing. It's 88% of generated stories when they studied it. And they studied a large set of 20,000, so from all models. So anyway, so it's quite
Well,
interesting.
so authors out there from Stephen King to Margaret Atwood know that. I got nothing to worry about. Like,
Yeah.
seriously, Elias Thorne is no James Bond. He's not coming after you.
And if you want to trigger it, you can try to just to tell have it tell you a story. Hey, tell me a story, and you'll probably get one of those names and occupations in there at least 88% of the time.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one
Around the
last
clock.
quick
What
thing,
do you got
stupid
here?
thing. We have the SERPs, free SERP simulator. It's at Search Engine Land. It's a tool that they created so you can go in there and see what your search engine, like the on the search engine results page, what your listing would look like with your title and description, which is nice because there are tools that offer that, but you also have to do usually like get more in depth, like do a crawl or something. So it's real-time Google data, and they'll show you how to stack up and how to look on the page. So it's a nice little tool. Free SERP simulator.
Well, that's
Yeah.
nice. I wonder what Adobe's doing with all this information.
Not at all.
Okay. You know what? I'm just being part of it. I strongly doubt that Search Engine Land is feeding
No.
information to Adobe,
And Adobe has all that information anyways because they're a data
even though they're the
analytics
corporate
tool.
daddies.
Ooh, the Astro. Oh, that's it. I just thought that was a cute story. But I love the Elias Burns story.
That was a great story. I love that
Yeah.
one.
Yeah, it was
And
really good.
I am very curious about the tentacle porn aspect of that story. But anyway, I digress.
Anyway.
You know, I gonna be getting like octopus ads for the next week because of that joke. It wasn't even a very good joke.
Oh my
Okay,
God.
we gotta get out of here. On
Yes, because
behalf
I'm
of
going to
Christy.
see the Knights at the stadium, even though it's a away game and I'm only seeing them on the Jumbotron. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, you know, good luck to the Hurricanes. Good luck to the Knights. I hope it's a really great game tonight.
Yeah.
World Cup starts
Yes.
in
Can't wait.
Mexico as of today. I'm on a watch party tomorrow, Canada versus Bosnia. Canada. But until then, until next week, on behalf of Christine Chackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Edge from Digital Always Media. You've been listening to Webcology recorded live to podcast on the 11th of June 2026. Get outside and enjoy the summer before it's gone. Take some water with you. It's going to be a real hot one. Stay well. We'll talk to you next week.
Hi, everybody.